You are about to listen to a sermon preached on the 22nd of December 2019 at South Shore Community Church, located on the South Shore of Montreal, and is part of the series, The Incarnation. Pastor Matt's sermon was based on Isaiah chapter 42, verse 1 to 13, entitled, The Triumphant Entry of Justice.
So this morning, I actually want to tackle this morning a bit of a big thing. This idea of justice. I don't know if you ever like have this idea or you've kind of felt the experience of like it's not fair. I don't know if that's just me, where you get home and you start like complaining to mom and dad for what happened at school, or you know, you go home to your spouse and you're just complaining like this happened to me and it's so not fair. Decisions at work are being made and it's not fair, and you don't understand why things are happening. Maybe things have actually happened to you, like really big things, and you actually really, like, it crushes you. It honestly, it crushes you. And it takes almost months to get over the injustice that you experienced. It's really, really difficult. And I know for all of us in the room, at some point or another, we felt it, we experienced it, and guess what? There's more to come. It's just one of those things. Injustice is just part of the everyday. It's just part of life. It's messy, it's disgusting, but there's hope. And this morning, I'm going to be doing a Christmas message, and it's called The Incarnation. The Incarnation is what Pastor Jay and I have been speaking on. And the Incarnation is this idea of God Himself coming down in human form. And what I want to say this morning is that that moment when Jesus comes down as a baby is a beautiful and majestic and phenomenal reality. And this morning's message, if you're taking notes, I've entitled it The Triumphant Entry of Justice. And I honestly believe that this thing that where it's just not fair, that there is something beautiful that Jesus invites us into. And I have this thing, we all have an innate desire to be treated fairly, to get what we deserve. We feel it, we believe it, and it's true. It is utterly true. We desire to be treated fairly, and we want to get what we deserve. And the reason why we have that beautiful feeling within us is because we're all created in God's image. All of us. And so there's a dignity and a value that's just bestowed on every single human being. And so when we are treated unfairly, unjustly, it tarnishes, it hurts the very fabric of our human existence, of who we are as image bearers of God. So, with that said, I actually want to show a video. Now this video, I don't know how much will have to do with my message. However, this particular video, what I find very helpful is it's almost like we're all going to go to Bible school. For like the next few minutes, we're all going to go to Bible school, and it's going to hopefully on the other side of this, we're all going to become on the same playing field a little bit. I feel like it will help us to dive a bit deeper in terms of what I would like us to kind of walk through. All right? And this idea of just kind of what does Jesus have to say, what does Jesus have to do when it comes to injustice in the world? So without further ado, you have a Bible. You can turn to Isaiah chapter 42. Isaiah chapter 42. And as you're flipping those pages, you can feast your eyes onto the screen.
If you were a praying mantis, it would be socially acceptable to devour your mate.
And if you're a honey badger, you have no regard for other animals. You don't care.
If you're a panda with twins, it's normal to abandon one to take care of the other.
But if humans do any of these things, we would call it wrong, unfair, or unjust.
Yeah, why is that? Why do humans care so much about justice?
Well, the Bible has a fascinating response to that question. On page one, humans are set apart from all other creatures as the image of God.
Yeah, God's representatives who rule the world by his definition of good and evil.
And this identity, it's the bedrock of the Bible's view of justice. All humans are equal before God and have the right to be treated with dignity and fairness no matter who you are.
And that would be nice if we all did that. But we know how the world really works.
And the Bible addresses that too. It shows how we are constantly redefining good and evil to our own advantage at the expense of others.
Yeah, self-preservation. And the weaker someone is, the easier it is to take advantage of them.
And so in the biblical story, we see this happening on a personal level, but also in families, and then in communities, and in whole civilizations that create injustice, especially towards the vulnerable. But the story doesn't end there. Out of this whole mess, God chose a man named Abraham to start a new kind of family. Specifically, Abraham was to teach his family to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice.
Yeah, doing righteousness, that's a Bible word I don't really use, but what comes to mind is being a good person.
But what does that even mean, being good? The biblical Hebrew word for righteousness is tzedakah, and it's more specific. It's an ethical standard that refers to right relationships between people. It's about treating others as the image of God.
With the God-given dignity they deserve.
And this word justice, it's the Hebrew word mishpat. It can refer to retributive justice.
Like if I steal something, I pay the consequences.
Exactly. Yet most often in the Bible, mishpat refers to restorative justice. It means going a step further, actually seeking out vulnerable people who are being taken advantage of and helping them.
Yeah, some people call this charity.
But mishpat involves way more. It means taking steps to advocate for the vulnerable and changing social structures to prevent injustice.
So justice and righteousness are about a radical, selfless way of life.
Yeah, and you find this idea all over the Bible. Like here, in the book of Proverbs, what does it mean to bring about just righteousness?
Open your mouth for those who can't speak for themselves.
And what do these words mean for the prophets, like Jeremiah?
Rescue the disadvantaged, and don't tolerate oppression or violence against the immigrant, the orphan, and the widow.
And like here, look in the book of Psalms.
The Lord God upholds justice for the oppressed, gives food to the hungry, and sets the prisoner free. But he thwarts the way of the wicked. Whoa, he thwarts the wicked?
Yeah, in Hebrew, the word wicked is rasha. It means guilty or in the wrong. It refers to someone who mistreats another human, ignoring their dignity as an image of God.
So justice and righteousness is a big deal to God.
Yes, it's what Abraham's family, the Israelites, were to be all about. They ended up as immigrant slaves, being oppressed unjustly in Egypt. And so God confronted Egypt's evil, declaring them to be rasha, guilty of injustice. And so he rescued Israel. But the tragic irony of the Old Testament story is that these redeemed people went on to commit the same acts of injustice against the vulnerable. And so God sent prophets who declared Israel guilty.
But they weren't the only ones. There's injustice everywhere.
Yeah, some people actively perpetrate injustice. Others receive benefits or privileges from unjust social structures they take for granted. And sadly, history has shown that when the oppressed gain power, they often become oppressors themselves.
So we all participate in injustice, actively or passively, even unintentionally. We're all the guilty ones.
And so this is the surprising message of the biblical story. God's response to humanity's legacy of injustice is to give us a gift, the life of Jesus. He did righteousness and justice, and yet he died on behalf of the guilty. But then God declared Jesus to be the righteous one when he rose from the dead. And so now Jesus offers his life to the guilty so that they too can be declared righteous before God, not because of anything they've done, but because of what Jesus did for them.
The earliest followers of Jesus experienced this righteousness from God, not just as a new status, but as a power that changed their lives and compelled them to act in surprising new ways.
Yeah, if God declared someone righteous when they didn't deserve it, the only reasonable response is to go and seek righteousness and justice for others.
This is a radical way of life, and it's not always convenient or easy. It's courageously making other people's problems my problems.
This is what Jesus meant by loving your neighbor as yourself. It's about a lifetime commitment fueled by the words of the ancient prophet Micah. God has told you, humans, what is good and what the Lord requires of you is to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God.
Welcome back from Bible school. So that resource is called The Bible Project, and you can find it on YouTube. And I think it's one of the best resources available for free. It's on YouTube for free, their own website, podcast. And they just dive into just almost everything about the Bible and Jesus and helping all of us kind of make sense of the entire story of the Bible. And what's great about this video is that I hope now we're in some way we're all kind of on the same page a little bit more when it comes to the word justice. Now, the word justice, the way it was pointing out, was this idea that, you know, we all have this thing within us that we want to be treated fairly because we deserve it, because we're all made in the image of God. And when it comes to justice, you're not simply doing charity. You're not just being generous with your time and your resources, but it's restorative. You're going out of your way to make other people's problems your problems, all for the sake of fixing and restoring and reshaping all the structures of society that keep people from continuously experiencing injustice. And it takes a lot of effort, a lot of skill, and a lot of courage. A lot of courage. So with that, we're in Isaiah 42. Isaiah 42 is in the Old Testament, and it's a moment where the prophet Isaiah, he is helping the people of Israel who are experiencing tremendous injustice themselves. They are so stuck in what they're seeing and what they're experiencing, and life is just not fair. And the only words of comfort that they're actually getting from each other is people are saying, "Don't worry about it. That's just how the world works. People are people. That's just how the cookie crumbles. What are you going to do about it?" That's just how it is. Not very comforting. And what ends up happening in these moments, and I guess you and I can be in the same boat, we behold our problems. We cling to them. We justify them. We take them as if this is just reality. And every single moment in history that has been won for equality has always been championed by people that say, "No, this is not the status quo. We're going to fight. We're going to make a difference." That's just how it is. And people have begun to behold, they've begun to behold a new reality where equality and justice can happen. And so for Isaiah, he's coming in and he introduces and he sees something that's so amazing, so beautiful, and he begins penning these things down, and they are called the Servant Songs of Isaiah. And they are four of them in the book, and you will see them on the screen. Four of them. And you can almost imagine as if they're a painting. And each one is painting a picture of one who is coming, one who is bigger, one who is more beautiful, one with the courage to actually confront the injustice of the world at its deepest, deepest roots, and he will be able to transform every ounce of injustice in the world at its core. And he's helping people, and he's championing them, and he's encouraging them to behold something new, something that's coming. And the servant is Jesus. It's so radical in the Old Testament that even the scribes that were actually copying the Old Testament manuscripts to be passed down from generation to generation to generation, as they read these servant songs, there is no identity given to the servant. But they knew in their heart with such excitement that they knew that this one who was coming was the Messiah. They actually broke a sacred rule when you're copying the Old Testament manuscripts, which was they actually inserted their own opinion. You don't do that. That's bad. That's absolutely tremendously bad. Like, you can die. You can be punished. You can lose your job for doing that as a scribe. But they were so excited about the reality of this, of one who was coming to transform the injustice of the world, that they would actually write in brackets. They would say, "Behold the servant," as each of these songs start. It says, "Behold the servant," and in brackets, right beside it, they would write the Messiah. And they were willing to identify and break the rule. The one rule they had for their job in copying the Old Testament manuscripts, they were willing to break the rule so that everyone could know one who is coming. It was totally worth it to break the rule. Now, in Isaiah 42, right before it, it actually is in Isaiah 41, really quick context, we actually see a court case. It's a big dark room, and we kind of see God in the courtroom, and he's the judge, he's the jury, like he's everything. And he's asking the question, who in the world is going to restore justice? Who's going to do it? Who's got the resources to do it? Who has got the courage to do it? Who has the capacity? Who's got the ideas, the plans to do it? And the verdict is no one. No one can do it. And the way this picture works and Isaiah sees it is you see God kind of pooling in all the great empires of that day into this courtroom, and they're being asked the big questions. Will you do it? Will you restore justice? What are your plans? And no one comes close. That right at the end of Isaiah 41, the verdict is there's no one. No one has the wisdom, the resources, the capacity, nor the desire to have a legacy of humility that will establish something forever. No one can do it. And then in this moment, in this dark room of Isaiah 41, we are catapulted into Isaiah 42. And we are introduced to the Messiah, the servant, where it says, behold, the servant that is to come. And so what I want to do this morning is we're going to walk through Isaiah 42 from 1 to 13 in the time that we have. And I'm actually going to do something a bit different. I'm actually going to walk backwards. So instead of going from verse 1 all the way down to verse 13, we're going to start in verse 13 and go all the way to the top. And the reason why I'm doing that is because I don't want to spend too much. I want to cover the whole thing, the whole song, but I want to kind of spend more time on the good stuff, which is in verse 1, 2, 3, and 4. But there's still more amazing truth of what Jesus is doing on the bottom end. And I don't want you guys to miss it. Because this Christmas season, if I have one goal this morning, is that in all the injustice, all the unfairness, things that you feel like you deserve because of all the hard work that you have put into, this Christmas season, Jesus wants you to behold that he's working on behalf of your needs. He truly is, even if you can't see it. So here we go. If you're taking notes, I'm going to be walking through this, and these are the sections. The justice of magnificence. So magnificence, the ministry of justice, the means of justice, and the man of justice. The magnificence of justice, the ministry of justice, the means of justice, and the man. So here we go. The magnificence. So verse 10 to 13, it says this. Sing to the Lord a new song. His praises from the ends of the earth. You who go down to the sea and all that is in it, you islands and all who live in them, let the wilderness and its towns raise their voices. Let the settlements where Kedar lives, let them rejoice too. Let the people of Selah sing for joy. Let them shout from the mountaintops. Let them give glory to the Lord and proclaim his praise in the islands. The Lord will march out like a champion, like a warrior. He will stir up his zeal with a shout. He will raise the battle cry and with triumph, and he will triumph over his enemies. I don't want to stay too long here, but this is just the end of, this is the picture of the end. When this servant comes, there is something far expansive. Where is this justice going to end up? Everywhere. Who's going to experience it? Everyone. There is not a single gender. There is not a single country, people group. There is no specific time in history that will experience this justice. No, it's for everyone. And it will end with utter celebration, and it'll be utterly beautiful. But I want to point out one thing for us to behold for this Christmas of the injustice that we might experience. Do you have family members that don't know Jesus? And you're praying for them? And you are saying it's not fair because I've done everything I could to help them know Jesus. They did Sunday school. I brought them to church. We did the prayers. We did our devotional time together. I've given them really good books to help them. It's not fair. It's just not fair. Are there people that you know that are so far gone, so far away, that you're going, I don't even think God can reach them anymore? Do you think like that? Are you considering that as the new status quo? And Jesus would say this, no. I'm doing something more amazing than you can ever imagine. What you see here, I want to point out just one thing. It's a picture that we see, the settlements of Kedar, the people of Salah. That means nothing to us. We have no idea what this is. We wouldn't even go here on vacation. We have no idea what these places are. But these are places in the surrounding regions of Israel that are so far off, and they represent people that the Bible would, like the people of Salah were in the mountaintops, the mountain regions, and they were always representing the people who had the hardest of hearts, that they were so stubborn they could never receive the goodness of God. The people of Kedar were so far gone in their sin that there was no way God could ever reach them. And the people of the islands that were proclaiming praise and experiencing something amazing were the people that were so far off, you couldn't even reach them. It was totally impossible. And yet, right in this moment, we're seeing it doesn't matter how hard a heart is, how far gone someone is in their sin, or how far they are from knowing a single Christian, this justice that is coming, which is Jesus, he will reach them. Let this be an encouragement for you and I to keep on praying for those. And some of you here are in this room, and you've experienced this. You would say, Pastor, you don't understand. Like, I was so far gone in my sin. I was so far from God, and yet he just pulled me out. And that's your story. And I can give you a microphone right now, and then you would just share that. It's a beautiful truth. This is real, utterly real. This is not old, ancient stuff. This is real truth. So no soul is too far gone for God to bring back. No heart is too hard for God to soften. No son or daughter is too lost for God to rescue. Behold, Jesus is here. That's what Jesus would say. Number two, the ministry. The ministry of justice. This is starting in verse 6. And you'll notice I'm rushing through, and I'm going to be skipping over some verses, because in some verses only God is talking, and it's almost as if, like, you know when someone comes to your house and they're selling chocolate and you're just like, it's nice to see you, and then you try to stop the conversation so they can go away because you don't want to talk to them? You know what I'm talking about? But you ever have like a police officer or like an FBI agent come to your house? Everything changes. You're just like, they're just like, hi, I'm, you know, FBI. Can I speak to you for a moment? And you're like, yes. Yes, you may. Whatever you have to say, you say it now. I will do whatever you say. Like, I will listen. I am all ears. There's the verses that I'm skipping over because it's really just God coming in and just like, G-O-D. And you're just like, yes, sir. I'm listening. So that's my short synopsis of the verses that I'm skipping. All right. So the ministry, verse 6. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness. Now he's speaking of the servant that he sees. I will take hold of your hand. I will keep you and make you to be a covenant for the people and a light for the Gentiles, or those who are not Jewish, to open the eyes of the blind, to free captives from prison, and to release from the dungeon those who are sitting in darkness. This is the ministry of justice. That you can be treated so unfairly that you're literally, like I said at the beginning, you're trapped. You're trapped in the injustice of what's been going on to you. And it feels like a prison. It can feel like you're totally blinded to new possibilities of a way out. You're totally stuck. You are so depressed that you can't even get up in the morning anymore. Or you try to get up in the morning, but you're sleeping until like 11:30. And you're going to work too late. Or you're always calling in sick all the time. You're kind of just like dragging your feet. You just are experiencing so much injustice. You're simply telling yourself, you're believing, it's just not fair. It's never going to get better. nothing will ever get better. If you are not sleeping well, the depression, the anxiety, the insomnia has just literally gripped you because you are experiencing so much unfairness. Because you know you deserve better. You feel it. You feel that you deserve better. You really do. And you don't understand why life is not giving you what you deserve. You feel it in your being. And you're dragging yourself and you don't know what else to do. If you're here this morning and you're alive and you're breathing and you're stuck, you're blind to see a way out, you're a captive in your own brain, what you think of yourself and what's going on, and you're literally stuck sitting in darkness. Behold, Jesus is here, and you're a prime candidate to be ministered to by Jesus Christ. Period. Behold that this Christmas season, when loneliness and the things that ought to be are magnified as you compare yourself to other people who you go, I deserve what they have. Or I had what they had and was stolen from me. And you feel it. And it's real. It's utterly real what you feel. It's the ministry of this one who is to come, who has come, Jesus Christ, and he will minister. He will minister to you. In Matthew chapter 9, it's a very famous passage where Jesus is multiplying the bread and the fish. It says this in verse 36, when Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd, totally lost, stuck in what was going on. What's amazing about this, following this verse, that compassion wasn't, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. No, that compassion moved Jesus to meet the need, and he ministered to the people that were there. He moved, utterly moved. And right now, as I'm speaking, this Jesus is here right now, and he will move towards you in your need. Matthew chapter 11, come to me, all who are weary and burdened. This is Jesus speaking, and I will give you rest. And this is not a burden of just like misery. This is a burden of expectations that are so heavy upon yourself that you just can't keep on moving. You're so stuck in what's fair and not fair, and you're comparing yourself, and you're expecting things from other people and yourself, and you're utterly weary and burdened, and Jesus is saying, come to me. If this is you, Christmas, the reality of Christmas is for you to be ministered to by Jesus Christ. That's the incarnation. It's a declaration like no other. It's behold. Behold. Jesus is here. There is no need too big or insignificant, no heart too crushed, no mind too shackled, no situation too dire, no darkness too bleak, no shame too heavy, no guilt too loud, no tears too hopeless, that Jesus will not minister to today. Behold, Jesus is here. That's the ministry. Now, the means. Because we still feel it. God, change what's happening. What are you going to do? Now we see in these verses 2 to 4, and I'm going to camp here for a bit. So I was trying to rush through to get to this point. This is what it says in verse 2. So Jesus, how are you going to do it? Because I need to know this. He will not shout, not cry out, won't raise his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break. The smoldering wick he will not snuff out. In faithfulness, he will bring forth justice. He will not falter or be discouraged till he establishes justice on the earth. In his teachings, the islands will put their hope. Isaiah is beholding and he's seeing something utterly amazing. He sees 7 knots of what Jesus is not going to do to restore justice. And he has 2 pictures. Now, you know what I think about all this? All these words? That he's not going to shout or cry out. He's going to restore all the unfairness, but all these little things, he's not going to shout, cry out, raise his voice. He will not break people. He will not snuff people out. He won't be discouraged or falter. You know what I think about this? This is nonsense. This is ridiculous. Because that's not how you change things. Because you know that if you want to change something, you got to argue your point. And you got to argue, you got to raise your voice, you got to complain a little bit. So people can hear you out. You got to do it. You got to cut people off, people who are disagreeing with you. You got to just like, you know what? I can't handle your negativity. I can't handle this. Get out of my life. You don't deserve my presence and my awesomeness. You're out of here, buddy. Someone will hurt you in such a way that you will, in literally defending your point, you will break them. Literally, you will break their heart and their mind, and you'll start attacking them as a person because you feel so violated for what they've done to you, and you'll break it. You'll just break them if you can, because you gotta win. Now, because that's just every moment in history, people, even the quietest of revolutions, like Mother Teresa, is a beautiful person. But she protested to make her point. And even what she propagated wasn't as long-lasting. It inspired people. But it didn't have the smashing effect of really bringing justice globally. If you really want to change something, you got to smash your way through it. You got to instill new policy in the workplace. If you want something done, you got to instill new policy so people know about it. And if people don't agree, either you don't talk about it, you remain quiet, and if you dare speak up, we'll fire you. But we know that if we want to get our way, if we want to experience what we deserve, we're going to shout. We're going to cry out. We're going to complain. And this works. If you do this, it works. But it's not sustainable, nor is it a silver bullet that's going to work every time. How do I know this? Because you tried this last night with the person sitting next to you. And it probably worked. To get your way, don't turn to the person next to you. But you also know that you have used that method before and it didn't work. So sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. It's not a sustainable method of bringing unity and justice anywhere, but it works. Just not sustainable. And yet Jesus is saying, I will not do those things. And we hate that because it's a slow process. We hate it, but it's going to work. Even Jesus coming as a small baby, it reveals a power of humility and self-control of our God that will permeate every portion of this world, every fabric, so that his power would be made known in a way that's utterly, tremendously marvelous. 1 Corinthians, this is a particular verse that is just all over the Bible. So it's not just in 1 Corinthians, but it says this, that he, Jesus, must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. As he is doing these things, he's not shouting, he's not crying out, he's not complaining, he's not breaking people, he's not cutting people off. He is literally moving in such a way that he is taking every enemy of your happiness and of your joy, which are the same, if they are the same enemies of God, he is taking them and he is putting them under his feet. If you have literally won a victory over sin in your life, if you are experiencing joy and you haven't at some point in time, but now you are, and you can actually say it's because of Jesus, you've experienced this, that he is reigning and he is taking these enemies and putting them under his feet. Next Sunday is a beautiful Sunday because it's Testimony Sunday. And we're going to hear this truth, this scripture, being real. People are going to share from their mouth what Jesus has done. Know right now that he is working in your life. Know it. Because we want Jesus in all of our situations to be dressed for war. We want him to crush people. We want them to bend their will. We want them, and he will not do that. He's dressed for suffering. I'm going to point out a little image here. We have two knots, what he's not going to do. We have seven knots, but then these two images. That Jesus is like a bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. But in faithfulness he will bring forth justice, because he will not falter or be discouraged. Remember I said at the beginning these are songs, the servant songs of Isaiah. Isaiah was a poet. He was a poet. There's a play of words happening here that shows something utterly tremendous. The word smoldering just is simply meaning, we'll go with the first one, the word bruised. The bruised reed is someone who is so crushed they can't go on anymore. They're just utterly crushed. The wind. My parents are here right now. I'll share a really quick story. When I was in college, I was accused of plagiarism. And I actually failed the course because of this, because of zero tolerance on plagiarism. And this was my time here at Vanity College, not a Bible school. But what was so bad about this was that I failed because they didn't prove anything. Their argument was, this paper is too well written for someone of your age. And no matter how much we argue for almost a year, or just under a year, to kind of prove our case, our defense. And the entire department rallied around the teacher who made the decision that even the dean himself was like, no, we're not going to fix it. This is just how it's going to be. You're going to have to retake the course at some point in time. And after a year of fighting and not being heard and just experiencing this injustice, I was crushed. The wind out of my lungs, just gone. And maybe you have experienced something so horrendous and so unfair that you feel like this. You're crushed on the inside, or like a smoldering wick, which is this like candle that's just kind of like, it's just the smoke at this point, that even if you blow on it to kind of put like the fire back in it, there's no fire. You're going to actually like extinguish whatever remains. And it's this picture of the person who has experienced so much unfairness that they're literally at the point where they're saying, I just can't keep going anymore. I'm just done. I don't have a capacity anymore to keep going. I'm done. I don't want to live anymore. I don't see a way out. I don't even have the courage to ask for help anymore. So what's Jesus going to do? Because it says that he will not break these people nor snuff them out. But instead, in bringing this justice and this fairness ever so slowly into our lives, he will not. You'll see it here in verse 3. He will not falter or be discouraged. The word falter is the same word for the word bruised. And the word discouraged is the same word for the smoldering wick. So what's Jesus going to do? He is going to take on and enter in to the injustice that we experience and let it consume him so that he can win the battle over it. And he will have a courage and a capacity that he will be able to withstand all the weight of injustice. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 17 says this, because of this, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way. Why? So that he may become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. For whatever reason, God in his wisdom decides that in order to instill perfect, unfailing, long-lasting, eternal justice, he needs to experience it himself first. Why? So that he can truly meet you where you're at. So you can truly understand what you're going through. But he will have a capacity to withstand the injustice to a place that you and I will never comprehend. Ever. That he is willing, in humility, to put on the frailty of all of humankind, to identify with us in all of our weakness, and he will experience the violent waves of sin and injustice, and he will be extinguished under the tyranny of death, only to swallow up its power and faithfully establish his reign. We want a God who is dressed for war, to smash people, and he's dressed for suffering so that he can not only understand us, but he can get to the bottom, the root of the injustice, and just cut off its head. Baby Jesus is not just a baby. This guy means business. It's an amazing, amazing truth. And so if you are sitting here and you are literally crushed and you are literally being snuffed out and you're saying, I just can't keep going anymore. Behold, Jesus is here. And he can not only sympathize, but he can empathize with what you're going through. If you're willing to just say, Jesus, I need you more and more. I really do. And he will understand. So with that, I'm going to invite the worship team to come forward. And I will close with just that first verse. Here, behold, is the man, the servant, the Messiah, whom I uphold, my chosen one, in whom I delight. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will bring justice to the nations. Jesus is not moved, or nor has a capacity filled with good ideas, good ideology. He is not moved by passion that will keep him going to the end. He is upheld by the very strength of God. His strength is just wrapped in the eternity of God that is just never ending, and he will never bend nor break nor be cut off nor destroyed by the power of injustice, but he will meet it in full force and take it upon himself with a full capacity upheld by the strength of God. That's why he can establish justice forever. It is ever far-reaching. Not only that, but it says here that he is chosen by God and he is experiencing a delight that will give him a joy to endure any ounce of suffering to the end. If you don't feel the love of God this morning, there is nothing that you can do that God will run out of love for you. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Because he doesn't get his delight from your love of him. He gets his delight of love from his Father. Which is why his faithfulness is never ending towards you and me. And that's beautiful. And the last one, how will he do this? With the Holy Spirit. Everywhere Jesus went, the Spirit moved and blew and affected people's lives powerfully and changed attitudes. Jesus experienced something utterly tremendous to withstand, to carry him through all the ounces of injustice that he faced. What are you experiencing to literally carry you through it? Are you upheld by the strength of God? Or are you just going, I'm just going to be strong enough myself to just fight my way through. I can just deal with this. Or are you actually upheld by the strength of God? Are you so crushed because your performance never measures up to anything? Or do you honestly feel and are accepted and are filled with the love of God in such a way that you know that beyond a shadow of a doubt, you are totally accepted by him? Are you so unsatisfied with the unfairness given to you that you've lost a deep love for yourself and for people and for God? If that's you, if there is a delight that is here, you can experience a deep love of your Heavenly Father that will help you to be incredibly satisfied in yourself, your situation, and people as you wait patiently upon the Lord to take every enemy and put him under his feet. And that you'll be able, like the people of Kedar and Salah, will experience a tremendous joy at the far end of all of this. I close with this. To be loved but not known is comforting, but it is superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear of all. But to be fully known and truly loved, it's a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything, because it liberates us from all pretense, it humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and it fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us. Behold, Jesus is here. Are you praying for loved ones? Do you need to be ministered to this morning by Jesus himself? Are you so stuck that you don't know where else to go? Are you ever so crushed in your heart because of injustice? Will you turn to Jesus? Are you experiencing a love of God that will sustain you through and fortify you through all difficulties of life? Where are you this morning? What do you need to behold? As we respond, you guys can come to your feet. We're going to worship together. I'm going to pray. But know that you can sit quietly. You can stand. You can worship. You can come to the front. It's literally between you and God. I don't know what you need to behold from Jesus this morning. But know that he is here, and he's here for you. Let us pray. So, Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you for who you are, that you have literally come into the world to literally shape and shake and restore things that are broken and unfair. And we can literally turn to you as our eternal hope. Father, I pray that you would sustain us, but you would also fortify us with a love that is so, so amazing. God, that your love would just literally be poured into our hearts, God. And that for those who are so burdened and so lost, God, that they would turn to you, God, because you're amazing. And you literally respond to the needs of your people. You are not deaf in your ears, nor you absent-minded, but you are closer than we ever dared hope. And that is beautiful. We love you, Lord. Amen.